It's Power Hour LSU.
I bid farewell to none other than Ashton Stamps. Oh my goodness, I loved me some Ashton Stamps when it came to his work ethic, when it came to what it means to be an LSU Tiger as a former three-star recruit, a guy that trained at DPT NOLA, who has produced so many great players. And last year, Ashton Stamps led our LSU defense in snaps, and towards the end of the season, it became really tough for him to reasonably keep up with everything on the field. So, look, we went and got Mansoor Delane, we went and got DJ Pickett, PJ Woodland has stepped up, and that LSU cornerback rotation has been airtight. So, with Delane eating up all the snaps, and obviously DJ Pickett having a phenomenal true freshman season, and, of course, some other corners in the mix for LSU, a guy like Michael Turner that LSU likes a lot, it was time for Ashton Stamps to move on. Now, did he quit the team? Maybe. And I understand there are some that say, hey, why are you spending any time on a backup that is leaving us? Well, this is a true freshman a few years ago that played special teams, did all the little things for us, and then slowly worked his way into the lineup, and then became a full-time starter. So I am perfectly fine by LSU doing right by him to preserve his redshirt, where he was just playing special teams and not even really close to seeing the field. There were instances where the LSU defense was on the field, and, you know, just based on where he wasn't really even thought of going into the game if someone were to go down. So I've always liked Ashton Stamps. I thought at the end of the season, we could have helped him out a little bit more by bringing in a backup. But look, he struggled quite a bit, and his next stop, I think he's going to be pretty good. In particular, if it's a stop outside of the Southeastern Conference, because he's a lengthy corner. He's a guy that can do some good things on special teams for some other big-time programs out there, maybe in the ACC or somewhere like that. And because he played so many snaps, he's going to have a good transfer portal market. So I hope and wish him the best in his final two seasons. And look, never say never. He could come back to LSU. He could very well do that. Now, we get to the next thing. So I made a joke yesterday in the Discord and on Twitter. Louisiana Tech losing further hurts our playoff resume. It was just a joke, okay? But the truth is, we need all the help that we can get in making the college football playoff. I understand none of you want to hear those words, the college football playoff, but could LSU legitimately still find their way towards a college football playoff? Well, let's just say LSU were to go 3-1 the rest of the way, and one of those victories is on the road versus Alabama. Then they will have a very strong case of getting in to the playoff. Now, right now, we're not a good football team. I think every single one of you would agree that right now, our team is not playing at a high level. We'll see if Whit Weeks can go this weekend. I doubt it. I would guess LSU would say, look, it's not worth putting Whit out there to hurt him even worse, and let's just have him full go ready for Alabama. I am of the belief that we are just a bit overreacting to how bad LSU has been. And a good example of that is this point spread with Texas A&M has remained within a possession. Even though they are favored, take a look at what LSU has done versus really good teams when it comes to the teams coming to Tiger Stadium to play the Tigers. Outside of Alabama, who played unfreaking believably well, there are so many teams during the Brian Kelly era when they play at night in Tiger Stadium that play by far their worst games. By far. Ole Miss is a good example where offensively that was their worst game. They dropped multiple walk-in touchdowns. They left a lot of yards on the field. Trusty and Lane Kiffin will tell you all about it. So Texas A&M, who's playing at an extremely high level, what if they come in and lay a stinker? What if Texas A&M says, look, we've been playing unfreaking believably well. What if we go into Tiger Stadium and we don't do that? There is a higher likelihood of Texas A&M not playing well at all when you look at the history of teams playing true back-to-back road games. It's so hard. It is so hard to go on the road and then the following week with no bye week mixed in there, you have to go on the road again. That's part of the reason why this LSU schedule going into the season, and it's another reason why the Brian Kelly era has been a big disappointment, is that for the most part, we have gotten some major schedule breaks. Now, I understand the schedule matrix that's on your screen right now. It's very tiny, but it's the only way we could fit all these schools in one graphic. You will see that LSU is one of the only teams that did not have to play back-to-back road games this year on their schedule. Whereas Texas A&M, this will be the fifth week in a row that they are playing an SEC game. And they will be on the back end of a back-to-back road game. So what does that mean? Well, only the elites of the elites can win back-to-back road games. Only the elites. Over the past couple of seasons, Georgia's done it recently. 2019, LSU's done it. We had Patrick Queen on the channel a million years ago now. And he and I talked about it in that 2019 LSU defensive game. They had Ole Miss run all over them. Well, part of that was because LSU was beaten up badly the week before in that 2019 LSU-Alabama game. So what did Texas A&M do this past weekend? Well, it was a 2:30 kickoff in a track meet versus Arkansas, where the final score was 45-42, where Talon Green ran all over the place. Whereas when you look at LSU, we played a shortened game. It was an 11 a.m. kick. We got back earlier in the night. The offense only played 49 snaps. The defense only played 67 snaps. Defense looks to be healthier. Bernard Gooden feels as if he is trending in the right direction. So those things do go into LSU's favor. And one thing we tend to forget is no single game is in a vacuum. No single game. Every game is its own thing in the minds of when we actually do matchup data. But the truth is, previous games have a lot of effect on the following games. So I think a few different changes could make LSU in a pretty precarious position in this game versus Texas A&M. So we go to our first Super Chat, and we go to Wyatt, who just joined our membership program. Good to see you. Perk needs his snap count decreased. Such a disadvantage having someone bad in coverage at star, and Perk hasn't been good enough to justify it. Well, before the season, I sounded the alarm on it. I wasn't the only one, okay? Neutral observers were also making those similar types of observations, okay? So what does that mean exactly? Well, when you have an outside linebacker that is playing essentially the nickel, and you're playing most teams that play a slot wide receiver, you are put in a really difficult spot when it comes to your coverages. Now, why hasn't this been exposed before the Ole Miss game? Well, when you look at every game that LSU has played up to this point, South Carolina is terrible. But the one long touchdown we gave up was in the direction of where Harold Perkins was lined up, the long touchdown run. It might not have been his fault, but we don't know. Then you look at Clemson, there were instances of Cade missing guys wide open versus a defensive front that we were running. It's just Blake Baker called a near-perfect game, and Clemson underestimated how dominant this LSU defense actually was. Then you go to the Florida game, and Lagway was just playing so badly, it really didn't matter. The Billy Napier offense was always rancid. Their offensive line had some unfortunate calls. How different is that game if they don't call the holding on Jacobian Guillory? Was it the most egregious holding call of all time? I don't know. But South Carolina was an offense that was just atrocious. And when you look at Ole Miss and when you look at LSU's game versus Vanderbilt, it is crystal clear that Harold Perkins is a big problem on the LSU defense. And the thing that really bothered me about what actually happened in this last game versus Vanderbilt is that we decided to play him on every snap like we did versus Ole Miss. And the thing is, no defense should ever just be determined by one guy. One guy should never, ever be the center of any defensive scheme when that one guy's not carrying his own weight. And the problem is, it's not that he's playing terrible. It's that he is out of position. So it's more so the mental aspect of this, us bending our scheme around, us bending our coverages around a coverage liability, a guy who is struggling to read the game, a guy that runs towards the quarterback at times just for the sake of running after the quarterback. And once again, you and I, we don't know the coverage rules and responsibilities or anything like that. But the truth is, maybe Harold doesn't either. Maybe he doesn't understand what Blake Baker wants him to do at the star position. And look, it's not just Perk. Weston Whit Weeks have had their shortcomings, in particular when it comes to tackling. Devon Keyes is a solid player. He's probably on a Greg Penn type of trajectory, a good LSU career, but not great. And LSU lost a key depth piece in Xavier Debo Atkins going to Auburn. And he's been mostly good there. Debo's a friend of the channel. He's been on the channel before. So it would be nice to have someone who also plays this kind of outside linebacker role as a backup. So he went to Auburn, and DJ Durkin is a really good defensive coordinator. But at the same time, Debo's missed a few assignments as well. He also had a deep interception return versus the team that we're playing this Saturday. So there you go. Now, another thing that I feel is important in the Brian Kelly discussion. So there's so much being said about the future of LSU football. Is Brian Kelly actually still going to be the coach of LSU moving forward? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know. What I can tell you, though, is that coaching at a program like LSU has gotten harder. It just has. And a lot of it is the national brand of a program still matters a whole heck of a lot. But it might not matter as much as it once did now that money can be a big-time equalizer in everything. So take, for instance, 10 years ago, if you were to ask the question, which program is better, LSU would no doubt be the better program than Texas A&M. It wouldn't even be close. Now it's close. I still think LSU is the better job, but it's close. So with the money infusion into all of this, the transfer portal into all of this, it matters. Now, another thing that truly matters in college football now is the word efficiency. All right, you hear that word all the time, efficiency. I'm about to share with you a very interesting rant that I replied to from the College Football Nerds. I think a lot of you have seen them before, and one of the nerds, I should know their names, but I think it's Josh. He released a Twitter clip today, and he was talking about how the possessions per game in college football have gone down. And not only in college, it's the same thing in the NFL. Take the Kansas City Chiefs. They lost week one to the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chiefs only had 8 possessions in that game. Whereas football games, normally you can have north of 12 to 13 possessions. That's about the average. So in Miami and Louisville, there was only 11 possessions in that game. So when you have fewer possessions, your efficiency matters a whole heck of a lot more. Something else that matters is if you are the better team, you want to play faster. LSU made a big deal, in particular, Brian Kelly made a big deal, about Vanderbilt's clock management. All right, the Jerry kill the clock method of pulling off upsets. And obviously, Vanderbilt was favored, but the reason why a program like Vanderbilt can do better, it's not just the portal and Pavia being a year 12 quarterback or the money being dispersed at all these different programs. It's that the games are shorter. And if the games are shorter, there's not as many plays in the game, and the better team doesn't always win. Depth isn't as important when LSU is only running 46 plays. So Brian Kelly mentioned that a lot last week. All right, he mentioned it this Monday. He mentioned it, I think, in the Monday or middle of the week press conference going into this game. And the problem with that is that he did not apply simple logic when it comes to going up against a team like that. You don't want to, on offense, bleed as much clock as you possibly can before you run a play. Now, LSU as an offense, we don't play at a fast pace. I wish we did. I think it would help quite a bit of things on our offense, including catching an opponent by surprise by playing at a faster pace. But when we were down by 10, we were taking forever to run a play. And I will say this again till I'm blue in the face. I have called out Berrion Brown so much for hitting the corner in the face, which caused a ruckus, which caused Vanderbilt to make substitutions, and the clock continued to burn. But now I'm going to cool off on that, because that was Berrion Brown's only instance of causing a ruckus and the full 40 and potentially leading us into the timeout. After that, we were still bleeding full 40s. We were snapping the football while down 10 in the fourth quarter with less than 10 seconds on the play clock. You don't want to do that. You do not want to do that if you're losing. You want to go faster, especially if you're down 10, because you not only need to score then, you need to score again. All right, let's go back to another questionable play call. When it was third in Krotz Springs and we were backed up and we had to pick up 30 yards to pick up a first down in the fourth quarter, we ran a draw, which is fine in the first half for you to run a draw. It is fine. But the problem with running a draw is that no matter what the result of the play will be, number one, you're not going to pick it up. Number two, we have not been a good QB draw or running back draw team, And then number three, you're going to punt. So it's better to just drop back and throw something deep or throw a screen or something like that that could actually potentially pick up the first down. And maybe you draw a pass interference flag. Maybe you get a roughing the passer penalty on the QB or whatever. But running a draw there makes no sense. Because guess what? You're doing what Vanderbilt wants you to do, which is play their game and shorten the game. Now, what does that mean versus Texas A&M? Well, if we're losing, let's play as if we are losing. Perfect example. At the end of the half, last year versus Alabama. Yes, the biggest reason we lost to Alabama was Blake Baker not being able to stop a running quarterback. And we allowed Jalen Milroe to run all over us yet again. So, what happens at the end of the first half? Well, we run a screen that gets blown up by Caden Durham. And it becomes third or fourth down with the clock in our advantage. We should have lined up and run a Hail Mary. We're down by 15. It was 21-6. So you must maximize the opportunities that are given to you, especially if you look at LSU right now, it's not a good team. And if you look at Texas A&M as a good team, well, they're a team that when they get a lead, they can get a little shaky. Like we saw last week versus Arkansas. Put the pressure on them. Put the pressure on them. Let's go. The best high school play-by-play announcer in the natural state. Yeah, I'm actually done for the season. I would love to call another high school game. Actually, no, I have one more. But I'm not calling a game on Friday. Let's go to Alexander. Man, this rain got me feeling like Marcel Reed's going to have a Milroe game. I don't think so. I think our defense is going to come out and play fine. I do think so. Why does it take till you're losing to use tempo? Well, it's not LSU's offensive identity. It's not. It's not what they built their offense around. But I'm a big believer in tempo. I am. Now, you know, also this week, much has been made about Cortez Hankton's wide receiver rotation. And I will tell you that just because you have a tighter wide receiver rotation, that does not mean you are going to be better as a passing offense, even though that's what I prefer you do. You know, one of my favorite offenses in all of college football right now is Arkansas's. They have a somewhat large wide receiver rotation. Now, they've had a couple of guys get hurt, so it's tightened it. But you look at a school like Georgia, they have one of the best offenses in college football. They have a super big, super large wide receiver rotation. That will also get tightened because they've had two season-ending injuries. But you can still win with a wider wide receiver rotation. But for that to work, you need to have a tighter operation. And that is something that LSU just does not have right now. So I wonder if the wide receiver rotation tightens. It's an interesting discussion because, look, if you want Kyle Parker to play more, well, Kyle and Aaron play basically the same position. They can coexist on the field at the same time. It's just their roles kind of become redundant, right? Kyle is best as a slot receiver. Aaron is best as a slot receiver. And then you have Xavion, whose best role is probably a slot gadget guy. You went and got Nick Anderson to be your outside X. He's not really done anything. What about Berrion? Berrion's been good this season. Had a bad game this past weekend, but he's been mostly good. Then you have Tre'Davious Green into the equation. So I do want to slightly defend Cortez because it's a little bit of a tougher role, a little bit of a tougher situation that he's in than one would think. Because sometimes you need to step in and just break some hearts. Let's go to Jace Max. The fan base right now is so toxic and out on this team. I bet barely anyone shows up to this game. I'm going to the game to support. Look, it's also important, Jace Max, that we ourselves as LSU fans, call ourselves out for being toxic, right? Toxic, you know, the most famous usage of the word toxic is actually from a Louisiana native, Miss Britney Spears, Pride of Kentwood. Look, we are all a little bit toxic. There's a few comments I would like to have back, a few tweets I would like to have back. We've all been in that spot. We're making offhanded jokes, and the Nuss Bus blows out its tires, and I've seen it all. Brian Kelly's bad or whatever. It's part of it, though. It's part of it. You know, we go through long-ass off seasons for this team, talking nonstop about what we could do. And if we beat Clemson, we're probably in a really good spot to make a true run at the college football playoff. And it's important to understand how frustrating it was that you beat Clemson, and everything that we expected with that victory over Clemson did not come to fruition after the win. So what do I mean by that? Well, we thought Clemson was going to be a true college football contender in a weak ACC. It's not the case. They stink. We thought if we beat Clemson, our team was actually going to be better than last year's team. Well, it's not true. We're like Clemson. We're just not that good. So it's frustrating to be on that high thinking, hey, yeah, the offense was kind of clunky, but we're going to hit another level at some point with more repetitions and the emergence of Berrion Brown and the hustle plays that were made in that game. Well, it turned out the whole operation was not good. And then, of course, there are so many disappointing Tigers that had dominant practices. Dominant. You know, when I mentioned the wide receiver rotation stuff, I didn't even say Chris Hilton's name. I would probably say, if you were to poll most coaches and players and media that attended as many practices as they could, they would tell you that Chris Hilton was the best wide receiver. Who did LSU pick to go to SEC Media Days? It was Chris Hilton. Who was the best wide receiver in the final three games of the season? By far, it was Chris Hilton. It's been a disaster, an outright disaster. Now, Chris deserves a hell of a lot of credit for hustling to ensure Xavion Thomas got into the end zone. But, you know, when you use that word toxic, a lot of things are toxic. A lot of things. I guarantee you when you're losing like this, and we've only lost twice, well, there's probably some toxic stuff going on behind the scenes. But it's also very important to point out that this is such a great spot for LSU versus Texas A&M. It really is. All right. Now, do I think Michael Van Buren changes anything for LSU? Well, yeah. I mean, that's just a no-duh thing. It's just, does it change it for the better or worse? Does changing Harold Perkins' role make things for the better or worse of LSU football? I don't know. What I can tell you, though, is I do think Perk could have a big game here. A&M's a game that matters a lot to him. He's from Texas. He was committed there. And honestly, when you go back to 2022, the only tough game he had was against Texas A&M. That was it. That really was the only one. And then you get to here, and, well, he's struggling. I do think if you were to change his role to a third down, sub-package kind of guy, and you mix in one weakness of Texas A&M's offense, which has been third down offense, and a lot of conversions they've made have been Marcel Reed conversions with his legs, which is obviously Harold Perkins' specialty, the QB spy, chase down the quarterback kind of role, and Perk is fast enough to bring him down. When you factor those things in, and he did not get to play in this game last year, he would have been a huge piece for us in that game if he were available. You could see this be a good game for him if they take him out of the every down role. If you do it, I would say Vanderbilt probably still moves the football if Harold Perkins wasn't in an every down role versus us. But I do think a good bit of what we did wrong defensively was him. Because look, DeMarcus Cooley did not play bad. Now, did he play great? No. He had some slipping issues on the Vanderbilt turf. What was one thing we brought up last week? That was the first turf game that we played. And we slipped a lot. And it cost us. There was a third and long conversion. DeMarcus Cooley slipped before he can drive down on the tight end. If he's able to drive down on the tight end and force an incompletion, they're punting on that first drive. Garrett Nussmeier slips. If he doesn't slip, he's probably hitting Aaron Anderson on the out and up. He panicked. He still had a chance to hit him. But he worked the check down to Tre'Davious Green for a couple of yards. So, you know, just being at home, you switch a few things up. That Vanderbilt game just does not look as bad. And then you get to Texas A&M. This is their fifth game in 5 weeks. Are they an amazing team? Yeah. But when you watch Texas A&M, do you feel like you're watching an unbeatable force? Do you feel like you're watching 2019 LSU or 2020 Bama or 2021 Georgia? No. Mm-mm. Not at QB, not at pass rush. At linebacker, they're really good. Secondary, you can get them over the top. Garrett, let's go. This is a very winnable game for LSU. It's a good spot. It's a good spot. Let's go to Alexander. He says, national media already saying the LSU job will open up if LSU loses this weekend. Well, here's the thing that really hurts Brian Kelly when it comes to if the LSU job will open or close. It's actually something that helps and hurts him. All right, that's coming up right after a quick word from our friends at Fortify Gulf Coast and FortifyGulf.com. PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortify Gulf Coast and FortifyGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you. It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563. Or visit FortifiedGulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LabordTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LabordTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LabordTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their 5 locations all throughout the Lafayette region. Alrighty, so you know it doesn't help that every single national personality is saying, hey, if the LSU job opens up, it's the best job. But one thing that does help is that all these jobs are indeed open. So unless you think you can for sure go get someone you feel is better than Brian Kelly, do you really want to pay a buyout of that much and then potentially not get the guy that you want? What if the guy you want is Lane Kiffin and Lane Kiffin goes to Florida instead of LSU? What if that happens? I've seen crazier things. I still stand by, though, that if Brian Kelly wins this game on Saturday, I'm not saying the opinions of him change, because it's going to be a lot of wait and see on the road versus Alabama. But I just think in this weird season of college football, with the top of the ACC being in free fall and the Big 12 being what the Big 12 has been, Penn State's down. So the top brands in the Big 10, you would think Indiana's getting in. You would think Ohio State's getting in. You would think Oregon's getting in. Obviously, you're going to have a group of a four team in there. What if LSU finds a way in? It would be an ugly way in. It would be a backdoor way in. But let's say LSU splits Texas A&M, Alabama, beat Arkansas, beat Western Kentucky, which, you never know. Part of my joke yesterday is Western Kentucky, we also play. That's why I sat and watched that game. They're a good team, but we should be able to take care of business. And then, of course, we play Oklahoma at Oklahoma. What if you beat A&M in Alabama and you lose to Oklahoma? Do you get in? I don't know. That has always been how I thought the season was going to play out. And the losses I had for LSU, I have it right here. I had LSU as a 9-3 team, lost to Clemson, lost to Alabama, lost at Oklahoma, losing the three big roadies on our schedule. Let's go to Jace Max in the Super. Carter, what's your take on why Nuss has been so bad, and why has BK not pulled him? Brian Kelly seems to not care about how Nuss plays at all. Go to MVB who runs. It's a great question. Why has Nuss been so bad? So look, I do think there are concerns about the work ethic that Garrett put in. All right, there's been little murmurs about that, and I've shared my thoughts on the situation is that I just don't know. I just don't know. You could, though, feel that Garrett could have worked a little bit harder with some of the mistakes that he's been making, not seeing things, not feeling out things well. We can get into the whole injury debate. How much was he hurt? How much wasn't he hurt? You can also get into the debate of the supporting cast surrounding Garrett Nussmeier is really bad. And this is what I would say to the Nuss criticizers. Yeah, you could make a case that the mobility of a quarterback could raise the floor of this offense. And that is something that Michael Van Buren could provide you. At the same time, you would need to recognize, though, that Michael Van Buren isn't that great of a runner. He does run some, but it's not really his game. Yeah, he had a QB draw versus Texas. That was beautiful. Had his own read pull. Touchdown versus Ole Miss. It would be nice, though, to see if the zone read is what is needed for the Joe Sloan, Mike Denbrock offense to get kicking again. But if let's just say Michael Van Buren were to play right now, and if you were to rank him based on mobilities in or quarterback mobility in the conference, he's probably still in like the bottom four or five when it comes to mobility, but it's still better than what you have with Garrett, who is the least mobile quarterback in this conference by a pretty wide margin. So that is something that Van Buren would provide you. But, you know, the last thing on the work ethic thing is that the only thing I could share with you with a gazillion percent certainty, and this is from LSU and sources at LSU, and this is from someone in Jaden's camp, but not Jaden himself. And if I saw Jayden, I would ask him about this, obviously. Jayden worked his ass off. I mean, he really was blue-collar, meat and potatoes kind of work ethic kind of guy. I'm not saying Garrett's not. It's just I don't know. Literally, I had someone in Jayden's inner circle who became a fan of the channel. I'm not the biggest LSU channel, but he liked what we were doing. And he's texting me videos from Los Angeles where Jayden played the Chargers and all of that. And he was like, Carter, just be ready. This dude is working harder than he's ever worked before. And he would send me videos of like Jayden training at outside of the LSU facility and stuff. And look, you can make anybody look good, but he was constantly telling me, hey, he's there. He's doing what's needed. And you could see that in his play, obviously. Something else is let's take a quarterback who is modeled after the same kind of player that Jayden Daniels is, a quarterback that I've watched every snap that he's played over the past year and a half, Talen Green. Talen Green, based on what I've heard from people at Arkansas, is that he really took a lot of things to heart. And analytically, he's the best quarterback in the SEC. Ty Simpson's better when you turn on the film and the overall team. He's better than Talen Green. But Talen Green's QBRs are insane. He has the highest QBR in the country right now. So, you know, you do factor that in. I do think, though, one final thing on us, and then we'll get to a different topic, is, and I understand it could get dangerous when you're comparing things to other things at LSU, but let's just go through every position group on offense. Where does this wide receiver room rank over just the past decade at LSU in terms of positional units? It's no better than bottom three, right? Offensive line. This is the worst offensive line at LSU. I don't think anyone could even argue another offensive line. It's that bad. What about tight end? It's bad. I don't know if you can include Tre'Davious Green as a tight end when a good bit of his production has been more so as a receiver split out wide. Now, the touchdown this past weekend that he scored was a tight end route where it was a delayed leak over the middle. It was a great catch, great play design. But Bauer Sharp has been a disaster, a downright disaster. So you then get to running back. This is a weird running back room. It's weird. I don't think anybody thought Juwan Johnson was going to be as big of a factor as he's been in this running back room when it was a shock in spring that he was moving to quarterback from the defensive side of the football. And Juwan has served that role well. But Caleb was a nothing burger. And then the JT Lindsey situation happened. We were in limbo with the Trey Holly situation. And, you know, we were down to two running backs, which is Harlan Berry and Caden Durham. Two different styles of running backs, even though their builds are somewhat similar. Caden is the faster of the two, where Harlem is probably the more gifted slasher and slalom skier when it comes to making guys miss and weaving through lanes, if you will. But LSU not going to get a transfer portal running back still baffles me. It really does baffle me. When you go into the season, and I think LSU side of things was, hey, we already have Caleb Jackson here. He's saying and doing all the right things. Well, you've also not really given Caleb a shot to do anything. I know he had the Ole Miss drop. I've defended the Ole Miss drop plenty of times. So one last defense of Garrett is that what does he have to work with? And then you factor all of that in with a not so great play calling operation. Yes, a lot of this is on Garrett. And my tune on Garrett, I was the biggest Garrett defender of the offseason, has changed. He's not been as good. And as good as I thought he was versus Vanderbilt when I rewatched the game and meticulously charted this and that in the third, it was not as great. From the RPO reads to the numbers counts to, you know, the protection settings, which isn't all on him. It's impossible to know whose job is what on the protection settings. But I think one question that I would specifically ask Brian Kelly, and if there's a media member that listens to this channel, one question I think you can ask that could help this team, and this is as specific X's and O's as you possibly can get. Why is it in the first half, when you had two vertical slot receiver touchdown opportunities, one on the first drive to Berrion Brown and one on the last drive to Kyle Parker, why was there unblocked B-gap pressure? I can understand if you're hot off the unblocked B-gap pressure one time, okay? And you guys can go watch a film study and see this for yourself where we explain all of this. And I do think this is important to bring into the debate because there was a viral Texas Longhorns YouTuber who actually played, who I think diagnosed to play wrongly between Kentucky, where there was unblocked A-gap pressure. When for that play and that protection setting, based on how I know how it's supposed to be set up or how it's normally set up, in that instance, the A-gap pressure is on the quarterback. But for me, I don't want there to ever be more than just one instance of where there is unblocked A-gap or B-gap pressure at all. Because, yes, I think you can get away with it and still have a big completion. And in this example, Arch did miss a guy on a slant with unblocked A-gap pressure. It wasn't on the offensive line. The offensive line protected it well. So I would ask BK, hey, do you want unblocked B-gap pressure? What happened on each of those instances? And were we right in setting those protections? I think he vaguely mentioned it one time in the Monday press conference, but we don't want that. We do not want that. And what I think Texas A&M is going to do is do that very thing. Even though their defensive line is good, they're going to force our running backs to make tough decisions. They're going to force Caden Durham to go back there and block. So I would love to know what happened on both of those instances, because I do think if you pick up the B-gap pressure instead of the edge pressure, Garrett has a shot to hit either one of those plays for touchdowns. Now, on the first one, Garrett was going to trade as the entire time. But on the second one, it looks as if he was trying to throw the football to Kyle. But there you go. Ant says, if LSU wins this weekend, it'll just build the fan base up to lose to Bama. It's what we've seen every year with BK, unfortunately. Yeah. Let's go to here. Is BJ... Don't get me started on the air conditioning here. Haley doesn't even know about what happened in the post-game chat. Yeah, our air conditioner is fixed for now. But, oh, man. It's actually just right here, our vents. It's like, I should go mobile to show you what my situation looks like. If there is an HVAC company that wants to sponsor the channel, my rates are not much, especially if you can come fix my problem. But, yes, I'm glad you care, Damon, that my temperatures are where it needs to be. No guests tonight, Jace Max. No, we'll have one tomorrow. we don't have to worry about building up for an LSU. LSU is not winning this game. Yeah, I think people are wrongly mischaracterizing this game because A&M is a very good team and they're a true national championship contender if they come out and play amazing offensively like they did last week. But it's so hard to do that in back-to-back road games. I'm just saying. Okay? Let's go to Jordan with the very generous super chat. He wants to ask about Kelvin Shepherd. I will happily talk about Kelvin Shepherd. Do I think there is a world where Kelvin Shepherd is one day the LSU football coach? Yeah, absolutely. I just don't know with the trajectory that he's on that he's going to want to leave an NFL job to come be a college head coach. I think becoming an NFL head coach is easier than being a college football head coach. So I don't know Kelvin well. I've interviewed him a few times when I was at college. Kelvin's about ball. He is about ball. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a big personality or he wouldn't recruit well or anything like that. But if you're telling me now that, hey, I could be an NFL head coach and don't have to do all the politician stuff that comes along with being a college coach, sign my ass up. I could see someone like the Miami Dolphins saying, hey, we had Brian Flores, who was good. And then we got the offensive whiz kid. Let's go get someone in the mold of Brian Flores, defensive mastermind, to change a culture in Miami. I could see that happening. I could see Kelvin being the head coach of the Dolphins next year. So do you think he would rather be the head coach of the Dolphins in the NFL or the coach at LSU? I don't know. Have you seen Tua play? So yeah, I'll call it now. Kelvin Shepherd is the next head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Calling it right now. There's a lot of other reasons as to why that would make sense. I don't think Mike McDaniel's going to keep his job. But that's no sourcing or anything like that. I have had somebody's work for the Dolphins. But they have not told me anything as far as the job is concerned. I would say this, though. All right. One of you mentioned, hey, who would you want to be the next offensive coordinator at LSU? And I got roasted for this, but Mike McDaniel. Whew. Could you imagine his offense at the collegiate level? It would murder. Like, literally, it would do amazing things. And I think he just wants to get back to coaching ball because his press conferences are strange. Okay, we'll take a few more here. Let's go to Terrence. Carter, does A&M break the hometown win streak at LSU this weekend? Talking 7 years. That's a good point. Jordan wants Coach O back. Coach O back in the media. All right, I saw this earlier. You know, Coach O was on three earlier. And someone mentioned that it's tacky that Coach O's doing these interviews with Brian Kelly. And Brian Kelly's struggling right now. I don't think that's the case, though. I think Coach O is ready to get back into coaching. I mean, it's been 4 years now. He was already sizing up this year for him to come back. And he's been sizing it up. He still talks to teams. He talked to Grambling a few weeks ago. And I'll be honest, I'm ready for Coach O to be back. I miss him. I do. All right. And am I still disappointed in those final years and how everything happened? Yeah. But, you know, I think one major change that's come into college football is that unless you are Cignetti or Kirby, head coaches are going to have far less power over programs. I really do think so. Like, you know, and I want to end on this because I've tweeted this out and it's kind of a baseball thing as well. You know, Tony Vitello is a big news today in college sports. He's a Tennessee baseball coach. He takes the San Francisco Giants job, and I'm furious. And I've let it be known a gazillion times, even though Tennessee is the number two program right now in the SEC, they're our biggest threat to LSU baseball's throne. I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss them because I am a big believer in growing college baseball. And even though Tony Vitello was an asshole and his players played with a little extra oomph, I like that. Look at every single sports league that has exploded in popularity. There is a visceral nature attached to it. You know, in the 80s when the NBA was growing. Well, what was the 80s? What was the 80s and 90s in the NBA? It was fist fighting. It was ugly. Dudes hating each other. Rivalries. Magic Bird. Isaiah Laimbeer and all those guys. Dude, they people are like, I've got to see what's going to happen. There was a drama aspect to it. Now, if you're just a baseball guy and you just want LSU to win as much as they possibly can, sure, this hurts Tennessee in a big way. They're in a lot of trouble. Because it was Vitello's program instead of Tennessee, where at LSU, it's LSU is always going to be the best baseball program, and Jay Johnson is the best coach. All right. But, you know, I think this does hurt the growth of college baseball because Tony was larger than life, and he added some extra juice. Now, I don't think it's going to cripple it by any stretch of the imagination. It's just he made the sport so much fun. I could not take my eyes off a Tennessee baseball game when I was just flipping through, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Tennessee and Arkansas playing. There's some storylines here. Tennessee LSU. That was must-see baseball TV with the Bear Jones home run and all that. So I'm disappointed. I really am. Now, I wouldn't want him coaching my team. Because there's a lot that comes with it. But, you know, I wish he would have stayed. But he's going to the San Francisco Giants. And my called shot is he's going to fail there. And he will take over his dream job, which is Arkansas, as Dave Van Horn's mentor. Thank you. All right, so it's the same thing I always say as a fan of Don Staley. I like Don Staley. I like Kim Mulkey 10 times more. Kim, and you can speak to this, Ann. It's good for women's basketball if Kim and Don don't like each other. It's good. I want that. We want rivalries. We want villains. Half the country think Kim's a villain. Half the country thinks Don Staley's a villain when they play each other. I like both of them. But... you know, I don't think they hate each other, but there's something there, and it's great. I like it. And then you have the full Wiley angle. It's good. It's good. So with Tony leaving, you know, you need people to hate. And now the only guy really in the SEC you can hate, and a lot of people don't like Sully at Florida, and then a lot of people don't like Schloss at Texas, and in particular, Schloss, there's a lot of reason to feel that way. But, you know, we'll see what Tennessee does. What is this, Juju? All respect, loss. Let's go to Jed. The LSU Texas A&M game is a Harvard business case study in sunk cost fallacy and whether to continue with BK even if LSU wins, considering the success in paying Jimbo $77 million to leave and getting Elko results. All right. Yeah, I mean, that's also something that's working against BK, and I brought it up last night on my show and Blake's show as well. You, dude, it does not help Brian that LSU, if they do lose, there's going to be a lot of people that say, well, why not? Let's just go on and pay it. Move on. Life's short. I just think from this point forward, it just does not make a lot of sense to overpay for any coach and then the buyout money being the way that it is. Now, the question is, why do so many coaches get ridiculous buyouts? Well, it's the agents. All right. So much of how you perceive the sport, or any sport, if you will, comes down to two things that have nothing to do with sports. It's the agent and it's the television networks. Okay. I mean, it's just the truth. My understanding is that Jimmy Sexton was the reason that Tony Vitello got the Giants job. He was the one that negotiated it. That guy controls a lot when it comes to coaching. And, you know, and get into a debate if it's a good or a bad thing, but, you know, Sexton's probably working the phones right now for Lane Kiffin. That's one of his big clients. Then, of course, the television networks. I mean, a lot of the insiders at these big networks are fed the info from the agents. So, wait, did Sully? Wait, what? Wait, there's no way. No. What? Wait, Sully stepped away? Damn it, dude. Jay Johnson. You know, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This should have been a 3-hour college baseball show tonight. Holy crap. Sully stepped away. We're losing the villains. We are losing the villains. Oh, man. Dude, I am pissed, dude. I am pissed. I need the rivalries. I need the villains. Damn. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. Big shout out to Jordan. He's our top super chatter tonight. Welcome to the membership program, Ronnie. I don't know which one of y'all are, which one of you is Ronnie, but welcome. I don't think either one. I'm not sure if any of these ladies are Ronnie, but welcome, Ronnie. How do you pronounce that last name? Please send me an email so I can know how to pronounce your last name. Actually, I'm afraid to pronounce your last name because it could be pronounced like a word that could sounds like a curse word. Ronnie. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Wyatt and Jay Smack, thank you so much. Simonich? I think you're right. Simonich. Ronnie, please shoot me an email. powerhourlsu@gmail.com. I've got to know. Simonich? See, now look. We have differences in the chat. Good. Women's basketball back in the PMAC Thursday night. I can't freaking wait. The Malaysia full Wally. I do want to share one final thing. I love Walter Nolan. I love Harlan Berry. But we'll touch on this tomorrow. There are some good true freshmen that were Louisiana prospects last year that are doing really good things. Okay. Thanos is good at USC. He's good. It did not matter that he missed basically all of last season, which his team, I think, still won the state title. All right. I will tell you this. I think it's going to make Brian Kelly sick that there is a Kyren Williams clone in Nate Shepard at Duke. They are similar. And he's been good. He's a good true freshman running back for Duke. And, you know, it would have been nice to have him. You know, that it was a really good running back class last year, where Harlan Berry was by far the prize of the class. Nate Shepard has been the most productive member of the class. James Simon has looked good for Texas. It's not great, but he's good. I like James Simon a lot coming out. If I had to choose, and I'm not saying this because it's after the fact, if I had to choose between James Simon and JT Lindsey, I would have chose James Simon. But Simon was really wanting to go out of state in Texas and all of that. That recruitment was a little bit different. And then, you know, Deshaun Ford was someone I liked a lot out of Opelousas. He's barely played for ULM. A bigger, thick back. Yeah, I don't know, Pierce. I don't know. I didn't really know a whole lot about him. I don't follow high school recruiting as much as I used to. I just can't, dude. I just can't. College athletes and school staff can now bet on pro sports. Obviously, that wasn't going to hold up in a court of law. They have to be allowed to do that. But if I were BK, I would tell everyone two things this week. Number one, be smart. We don't want another Kayshon situation. And then number two, hold the ball all the way through the goal line. Hold the ball all the way through the goal line. Yeah, I saw that, and his brother is Will Shepard, so he was a wide receiver that went to Vanderbilt and then last year went to Colorado. I don't know where he is now. So maybe it was some of that. Maybe they don't like LSU. I don't know. All right, y'all. We'll see you tomorrow, 6 p.m. Central. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. If you want more LSU coverage, go check out my buddy Blake Ruffino. And I think he's live right now. And tonight we are doing – oh, okay. We'll keep it going. Jed, thank you for the super. All right, Jed, you get the final question. Go on ahead. Or if you want to keep super chatting, let me know. My mom brought me a salad from one of my favorite places because she saw my belly getting too big and she was like, Carter, we got to stop this. I had eaten like 5 straight days of Baconators. All right, Jed said he didn't have a question, so we'll let Pierce have the final word. There's too much working in Brian Kelly's favor off the field to make a move to get rid of him. 2027 class is insane. The buyout is simply too much. Title game in NOLA. QB transfer now would favor that year. There's only one person on the planet that likes Baconators more than me, and it's Ann. Wendy's is a dream sponsorship for mine, of mine. All right, y'all. We'll talk soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight we are doing salads. Let's go.